this Community and Regional Affairs Committee meeting to order at about 8:10 in the morning on the 17th of February. And we have in attendance Representative Dyson, Representative Kukich, Representative Halcrow, Representative Burkowski, Representative Jewell, Representative Morgan, and Representative Harris. We have a full crew this morning. We have one item on the agenda today for consideration, House Bill 255, relating to villages, and our sponsor is here this morning, Representative Dyson. The floor is yours, sir.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I'll move out here so I can y'all. This piece of legislation is something that I've wanted to get done and tried to figure out how to do for the 3+ years I've been here. And our Constitution mandates that we do all we can to allow communities to organize and to encourage them to do so. And during my years that I've been paying attention, the trend has actually been going the other way. Villages have been disorganized because of the strictures there, the limits on it, and often the financial responsibilities. A friend of mine was visiting with one of our rural Alaskan leaders a few years ago and said, "How did you guys do business, community business, in pre-contact times?" And as the rural leader explained it, my friend said, "Gee, that sounds a lot like what my ancestors did in town meetings in New England." And he encouraged me after I was first elected to work on making it easier for small communities to organize in a way that made sense for them, let them pick up the responsibilities they wanted, and have a government that was practical for them and perhaps culturally comfortable and familiar. Spent a lot of time visiting with Vic Fisher, and he said, "Oh man, yeah, that really needs to be done." And he said that he had made a try at it about 15 years ago, and didn't get the ball kicked through the goal. And I visited about it quite a bit. We started out in the original version that you have of House Bill 255. I think that was maybe the D version. Is clumsy and really doesn't get the job done. So we have before you, and I hope you'll adopt, the committee substitute. And this is largely the suggestions that have come from affairs. And in my dealing with those folks over the last 3 years, I see them struggling, I think would be a good word, to find in communities a local entity that they can do business with, and they have been eager for it to be easier for the communities to organize. So the committee substitute that you have before you is largely the rewrite suggested to us by the folks at Community and Regional Affairs and some feedback we've gotten from some community leaders. And what it does is adds a new category of a home rule second class city, and it allows them then to define their own constitution or charter of what responsibilities they want, how they want to organize, and how they want to support themselves. It gives all the flexibility that first class cities who can write their own charter have, but it allows them to pick from literally an almost limitless smorgasbord of responsibilities they want to pick up and how they want to organize. So I'm hoping that this will give some of the villages or communities that are already organized the flexibility to divest themselves of some responsibilities that they find are too tough for them and organize in a way that they're comfortable with and stay organized under state law. For other communities, and I think Glen Ellen and Tok come to mind, I think Tok has recently disorganized, and Glen Ellen hasn't been for a while, and maybe it's vice versa, and gives them a bunch of options that I hope they'll find attractive. So I would ask that the committee would adopt the, for the purposes of our discussion at least, and the testimony we're going to hear that we substitute.
Chair, motion to that effect, Representative Brown.
Chair, I move that the committee adopt CS for House Bill number 255. This is 1-LF1000/H. And use it as our working draft.
Thank you.
Are there no objections?
Thank you.
Move.
I think we will hear a point at which there is some contention. I suspect the Department of Law will tell us that the way we have it written here, we need to change the name throughout this bill. Our own ledge legal, Pam Cook, said it's not necessary. I think the Department of Law will say it is. And if so, we will have the choice here of picking a name for it. And the options that I have come up with, or we have come up with, are second-class home rule city, second-class charter city, home rule second-class city, or charter second-class city. And somehow or the other, starting your name out with second-class doesn't sound good to me. And without a lot of thought, I had thought that home rule second-class city sounds the best and really kind of says what it is. So I'm open to questions. My staff, Peter Torkelson, is here with me, and he, as usual, knows a lot more about this than I do. We'll try to answer your questions, but I think we'll have some good testimony.
So, Representative Dyson, then the home rule community is the title in question as to whether or not that fits legal parameters.
I'm sorry.
Home rule community title is the title that's in question here as to whether or not.
Yes. And it's one we like.
I don't have any problem.
Go ahead, Peter.
Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Dyson. The question I have is, you know, when you first started down this path, and I think you started probably before anybody else did, started talking to some of us about this kind of an issue. It was in recognition that the real rub was between tribes and whatever form of government that the state would allow to be sanctioned or recognized. And I'm wondering what that does to eliminate the rub from the tribes.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. We all come at this from a different perspective. And certainly mine is that I would like to see as many communities as want to organize under state law, and that not be exclusive of organizing in another way that they choose. I'm particularly enamored, as we've talked about before, with the Quinnahawk, what they've been doing out there, where they have a tribal government and or an IRA, and they're also organized as a second-class city, and they all sit down at the same table for the town meeting, and they work off the same agenda, and everybody participates in it, and it's a really an integrated sort of thing. And then the city there contracts with the tribe to provide all the city services. And run the power plant and do the water and wastewater, as I understand it. And it kind of works neat, but we can't, I don't think, enforce that. What I want to do is remove as many barriers as we can and allow folks to do whatever degree of organizing and integration they want.
Follow up, yeah. So you don't see this in any way, shape, or form usurping what tribal governments will continue to be able to do?
No, nor is it my intention to, but, the rub will come, to be frank, is to organize under state law with our Constitution the selection, or, you know, the selection of the city government probably cannot be done on a racial basis or an ethnic basis. You know, it, whoever wants to run for the city offices under state law, you know, there can't be a racial disqualifier. And so as long as the elections are open, you know, under state law, it'd be fine. I hope it doesn't have either cause more divisions or dampen any community's enthusiasm and ability to do whatever they want to do under federal law.
And one more, Mr. Chairman. And as I read this, this bill merely offers another venue but does not mandate.
That's right.
A community.
That's exactly right.
Representative Dyson, have you been in contact with the local boundary commission about this?
Chairman, my name is Peter Torkelson, for the record, I'm staff to Representative Dyson. We have been in contact with Division Director Pat Poland and Dan Bockhorst, who I believe are both online today. They intended to be. Dan is the local boundary commission resident expert, and of course Pat's been there for quite some time and seen a lot of these things develop. It was through their suggestions that we developed the CES. Our original bill did not give any new options to existing second-class cities, and they said, well, that may be where the biggest need is, simply because there's a lot of communities that incorporated. There's very few Alaskans, relatively speaking, who aren't already under second-class cities. So let's let second-class cities, you know, consider letting second-class cities adopt a charter as well. And that really became the soul of the new bill. And they're here to answer questions or provide other insight.
And this bill gives the option for a second-class city to become a home rule community if they want, sort of pick and choose the services that they think they can afford to offer and be mandated to offer, so to speak.
And write their own constitution.
Representative Morgan.
Representative Dyson, what's the difference between a second-class city and a home rule?
Co-chair Morgan. The difference is primarily that, let's back up, any unincorporated area now can choose to be home rule. But they have to have 400 people, they have to zone and plat their land, and they have to, every year, they have to go through a full financial audit. So that right there are barriers to an unincorporated area becoming a home rule city. An existing second-class city now cannot choose to become a home rule. And if they did, they would have the option of saying, we don't need 7 council members, let's just have 5. Or maybe we don't want to go through, have this formal process like we're having here. Let's do it more of a town meeting style of discussion and governance. So hopefully that would be something that people would consider. They also, of course, can completely define what they want to accomplish and perhaps how they want to go about doing it, whether it's just a particular service that's needed in the community and nothing else. Is flexibility.
Hello, Representative Jewell.
How difficult would it, maybe I'm being suspicious by nature. I'll apologize in advance for this question. How difficult would it be for, let's say this bill passes as is, but for the legislature, because we're the only ones that could amend this, to come back and mandate that a home rule community, second-class city, would have to pick up some of these other responsibilities?
Well, all it takes is 21 and 11.
You
know, but the same is true now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that playing field won't be changed. What this does, hopefully, is give more flexibility for those folks to do it. And so that doesn't change.
Other questions for the sponsor? Fred, do you see any downsides to this? That you've done a lot of work on this and have over the years. Do you see? To me, it seems like a win-win situation for communities that are having trouble maybe staying classified as to what they are now. They can move down to something that's a little less restrictive and still maintain some sort of a community status. But do you see any downside on the way horizons coming up involving, say, tribal governments or that type of thing?
I don't. I don't. Because it's totally optional and expands the options and so on. I personally long for the day when the real and imaginary divisions in our state are ameliorated and so on, and that I see that this can. Is helpful and provide another small step for some flexibility in that degree, and I hope that folks out in the unorganized areas and so on will see that this is an attempt of the legislature to allow more flexibility under state law and be less rigid and stuff. Because boy, let me tell you, for a small community, picking up platting or having to be a school district and stuff can be a very daunting responsibility. Dick Fisher told me that when he got into this the last time, the only thing that they could ever agree on that everybody wanted was animal control, you know, to deal with dogs running loose. And the bill that they finally got down to the bottom of was a new class of city that had animal control.
Representative Murkowski.
Follow up on Representative Harris's question, then, is there any opposition to what it is that you're trying to do? And why, I mean, you indicated that Vic Fisher has been kind of mulling around the same concept for years and years, and we've never been able to get to this point. What's been the difficulty? It seems, as Representative Harris says, kind of a win-win. You're offering greater flexibility. What's been the problem with the hang-up?
I don't know, but you know, as some of the folks here can tell you, there's a fair amount of suspicion, and I think a bit of paranoia around in our state, and perhaps some of it's deserved. You know, times I've been in some rural communities, people have said, "Hey, you seem like a pretty nice guy. State has treated us terribly." You know, for a long, long period of time, and anything the state does, we have great suspicion about. And I think some of that antipathy has been deserved, hopefully not from deliberate action, maybe just from ineptitude and blundering as governments do and so on. So the only opposition that I understand is from people who actually or believe that they have been badly treated by the state. And it's been very awkward for them to deal with the state. And so that gives them a significant amount of reservations about anything the state does that kind of messes around in their arena.
Representative Paula?
No, thank you.
Representative Halcrow?
Representative Dyson, have you had any cities or areas that have expressed an interest if this should become law to embrace this new concept?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, there's a gentleman sitting behind me here from Southeastern that I think is pretty excited about some options this along with his community. And, but it hasn't. We haven't done anything to get any publicity out, you know, stuff about this.
Any other questions? For a minute, Brett. Three people signed up here in the audience this morning to testify on this bill. First, Margie Vander, is it Vander? Vandar? Department of Law. Good morning, Margie.
Good morning.
Record, please.
For the record, my name is Margie Vander with the Attorney General's Office, and we just had opportunity to look at the CS, but I think that notwithstanding, I think, the obvious goals that are trying to be met, the Constitution does specifically state that all local government shall be in cities and boroughs. And with that, home rule status can only extend to cities and boroughs. And I'm not certain, and I imagine Sam Cook and I can debate this, but that you can extend home rule to another entity just by redefining what a city is under the statutes. The Constitution even goes so far as to say that a city council, that a city shall be governed by and named the city council, and a borough is governed by an assembly. And notwithstanding a charter, the Constitution does supersede a charter that's going to say, well, we're going to call our city council something different. I think that the Constitution here, there was a lot of debate, if you look at the constitutional minutes, to say that local government powers would be vested in cities and boroughs. And they looked at all different kinds of names as to what we would organize our local governments under and allow taxing powers to be extended to and home rule powers. And there's even a specific provision as to first-class cities being able to automatically go for a charter status. Section 11 of Article 10 allows the legislature to extend home rule to other cities and boroughs, but to rename a new classification of a local government, a community, I'm not so certain is allowed under the current Constitution. The minutes that I have read, and I have been with the Local Boundary Commission for over 10 years, and I've looked at the government article a lot. They looked at parish, they looked at county, they looked at village. They discussed all of those things and came down to deciding the term borough and city were the terms that would be used for organized government in the state that the legislature would be allowed to delegate the taxing power to. And we have two major Supreme Court cases on this, State v. Alex and the Liberati case, that local governments are not allowed to delegate that taxing power. It's very, very specific in the Constitution as to who it can be extended to. And so notwithstanding, you know, what I think the wonderful goal is of this bill, I think the name is a problem. And I don't know if the issue here is still just to extend a home rule status to another level of a city, that we have the second-class cities existing out there, that home rule status be extended to second-class cities. But I'm not certain why a home rule community and calling something a home rule community and then redefining city to allow that to be considered a city is accomplishing any more than allowing home rule status to a second-class city. So anyway, that's where the Department of Law sits on this. I have not had an opportunity to discuss this with Tam Cook to see her views on it. But
So let me ask you this, Margie. Then your feeling of a home rule community and a second-class city, what are the differences?
Well, community is not a recognized term for a local government in Alaska. You can extend home rule to a second-class city and allow them to adopt a home rule charter. The Constitution does allow you to extend home rule to other than first-class cities and first-class boroughs.
So if you extend a home rule to a second-class city, will they be able to then pick and choose services they wish to offer or not offer? Type of thing.
As long as you provide for it in state law as to what things a second class home rule, what the mandatory powers would be. I mean, even all home rules have certain mandatory powers, notwithstanding their charter, their organic law, if you will. But it's really to give them a little. It does give them more, I guess, personalized power for their area when they get to do a home rule charter. And even though there are samples that are given out, mandatory powers are things that you do establish in law. And then if they become home rule, then they do qualify under the Constitution as having all powers that are not limited by law or charter. And so that's by you and by the charter. So.
From the discussion, it sounds like this is something that needs to go before the Judiciary Committee. Would you have any objection? there next. I noticed it's not assigned to it. It goes to finance from here. But it sounds like, just from the comments we had prior to this, that everyone is in agreement as to kind of the direction you're trying to take with it, but that there may be a constitutional issue that we need to get around.
Yeah. I'm eager for two things. One is this to be done as well as we can do it, and to get it done this session. This has been amongst my highest priorities for 3.5 years. And so I think we can fix this legal question here by changing the name and getting out of that. But as I understand it, and please comment, if we choose the option of just expanding the second class, existing second class city category to a home rule, then we have to get into the business here, and I think it's properly here, of deciding at what village size we want to mandate platting and becoming a school district. That will take us a bit of consideration to come up with that. If we come up with a new category, which is what I believe the committee substitute does, with a new name, we don't have that, and that's left to the folks with as they write their own charter. Am I correct?
Peter.
Peter Torkelson, staff representative Dyson again. That is essentially correct. If we choose to just open up home rule to second class cities, then we have to draw this line of distinction, because right now all home rule communities are school districts. They have to zone and plot land, and they have a full financial auditing requirement. So that means that we're going to have to say, well, is 5,000 the line, or is 3,000 the line where you become a school district or you're not, or you plat or you don't, or you audit or you don't? And so if we just say, we're not going to try and make that call. We're just going to say, if a community decides to step into this new class, pick your name, new class, then you're not a school district, and you don't have to plat, and you don't have to zone, and you don't have to audit. And so that's the reason for coming up with a whole new third name, whether it's community or city or, you know, pick your name. So that's the reason, is so that we don't have to try and make these essentially artificial distinctions, because the difference between a community of 3,000 and 3,001 is just one person. So it seems better to go with the third name.
Margie, can you? Thank you, Peter. Can you help us here? I mean, I don't want this to be a problem. I support what Representative Dyson is trying to do here, and I think we're going to need some help from the Department of Law here if we don't take this to the judiciary. we're not in the law business here, but we're going to need your help. Can you do something to help us with a name, at least, or something that can help solve this problem?
Well, Mr. Chairman, of course we'd be happy to help, and I know Mr. Bockhorst is online as well, and that I've just had an opportunity to see the CS today and give this some thought, but I'm certainly available to help. I don't know that I have anything to offer right at this second without consulting with the Local Boundary Commission and Representative Dyson as an alternative that I'm certain throughout Title 29 is going to, you know, be the magic words here today. But I'm certainly willing to take whatever time is needed and come back and assist.
Representative Kukesh?
Thank you. I'm interested in the other individual you said you were probably going to have a debate on based on your interpretation today. And next time we have a meeting, I'd like to have her come too.
Oh, your legal counsel, Pam Cook?
Yeah.
Well, I understand Mr. Dyson, Representative Dyson, say that she didn't think that the term community would be a problem. But.
Well, I follow. And the reason I say that is because interpretation of law, and we all know this, is something that is not a art form, and everybody can interpret however they feel. I think you realize the intention and the direction we want to go today, and the interpretation of the law certainly is going to play a huge part in this. I really think that when you go back to the Constitution, you have cities and boroughs in it. I don't think that the framers of our Constitution wanted to exclude the number of communities we're going to exclude by not adopting something like this. And it just plays havoc on in the state of Alaska to not allow those communities to have some sort of process to go through where they have a recognition or a working relationship with the state. And it just bothers me that we would have someone look at a CS and a few minutes later given an interpretation that would kill the direction that this bill wants to go to. So I think Co-Chairman Harris is absolutely right. We need some help on this. And help is not something that comes in a form of can't do it. Thank you.
Representative Dyson.
Yeah, I appreciate the concerns of the previous speaker. As I understand it, the problem that Marge brings up is not a game stopper. You know, and indeed, if indeed we adopted a different name, the constitutional problem goes away. The only thing that Pam says is we may not have to do that. You know, and so I have no problem with changing the name, which eliminates your concern and the possible constitutional conflict, and there's no downside to that. You know, and we're literally just dealing with the fact that the Constitution says you can only organize under two ways, boroughs and cities. You know, and so we have the choice of putting together a constitutional amendment and trying to sell it next fall, or coming up with a name that meets the constitutional requirement from a pretty strict perspective, or calling it community as we did in our bill and facing a future legal challenge over it, you know, and so on. So my option is we lose nothing by changing the name, you know, to conform to what your Department of Law is saying the Constitution does. And the only thing we lose is a little bit more palatable name that we might choose, you know, for folks who traditionally are cities and boroughs are not terminology that they're used to. But so in terms of our purpose and the content of it, I think changing the name does very little disservice and eliminates both the possibility of a future constitutional challenge.
Representative Halper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a suggestion, thinking out loud, if a home rule borough or city needs to be encompassed in the name, why not have simply like a limited home rule borough, something like that, rather than a home rule borough, you'd have a limited home rule borough. Hello, borough. Would that be possible? Would that satisfy the question?
Through the chair, Representative Halperl, limited home rule borough. I've never heard of a limited home rule borough, but that probably doesn't mean it can't be defined in state law.
But it would address the constitutional question of just having boroughs and cities. That's what I'm getting at.
Yes, and through the chair, even a unified municipality, even though that's a term used in state law and not in the Constitution, that did take a city and a borough together and unifies it. So you haven't changed the underlying concept. And that may be with your concept of a limited home rule. You haven't taken away the idea that you've got a home rule city or home rule borough. And whether you say it's a second class or a limited or this or that at the front of it, I don't think it's going to change the legality of its existence.
In the suggestion of limited lies within the fact that, according to the legislation, the city or area can limit their involvement in government. I mean, they can place their own limits on themselves. That's the flexibility. So when you refer to them as a limited rule, it would mean that community can limit whatever rules they live by.
If I may respond to the chair, Representative Halcrow, I think that's the intent here. But also, just so to reiterate that Title 29 does still specify certain limitations, if you will, is what they're called, on home rules, that they do have to comply with certain things. And I think that what Mr. Torkelson was responding to on just calling it a home rule at this point, it's going to take
a matter of looking throughout Title 29 and not requiring certain limitations to apply to those limited home rules so that they can take themselves out of certain requirements, such as the audit and the platting and the school district. And I, as a drafting measure, I don't think that that's undoable. So.
Representative Kukin. Any other questions for Margie? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
John Pearson. John, are you here from Hyder Community Association?
Morning. For the record, my name is John Pearson. I'm here representing the interest of the Hyder Community Association in Hyder, Alaska, speaking on behalf of the Board of Directors in support of House Bill 255. My own role in Hyder is I'm the economic development specialist for the community. In positioning Hyder, there are several points worth mentioning which you may find interesting. In fact, there's times that people say, where's Hyder? And the other thing they often say, well, we remember being Hyderized. You know, that's a term that's often used relating to one of the activities that used to go on there quite a bit. Hyder is an unincorporated community located on the U.S.-Canadian border. In addition to being the most eastern point in Alaska, it is also Alaska's only border town. And it also allows the shortest distance between Alaska and the lower 48 by direct road. We often think of Hyder as being Alaska's front door. The population of Hyder is approximately 130 individuals who share the border with their nearby neighbors in Stewart, British Columbia. Of the 130 people that live in Hyder, there are only five year-round jobs in the community. Of these five, one is truly a full-time year-round job. The highest wage in the community is $10 per hour. The distance between the Zolls in Hyder and the next nearest Alaskan is 165 miles by water. However, last fall, DOT eliminated all future ferry service to Hyder in order to save some funds. And we're not in opposition to that. We support that because Marine Highways was taking a real loss there. Unknown to most in Alaska is that we do, in fact, export our children to Canada each day. There's approximately 20 children in Hyder that every day clear Canadian customs, go to school in Canada, and after a day's school, come back to Hyder, crossing the border again, and returning to their families. They do get a good education there in Stewart, and that's funded in part by the state of Alaska. Hyder lacks sewer and water facilities. They operate a non-compliant solid waste disposal site. Hazardous waste that has built up over the years as a result of mining activity, which started around the turn of the century, the last century, to spent oil, it accumulates in the community. We're unable to get those dangerous items out of the community. You can't fly them out. You can't take them out by water. And the Canadian Customs is not interested in us bringing these things across the border for disposal. As I said, the Hyder Community Association, which is a nonprofit, represents all of the interest of the residents in the community. They have a long history of providing for people there and a form of representation for the people in Hyder here in Juneau. Today, the association functions include operation of a fire department, emergency aid service. I should mention both of these do occasionally go across the border into Canada, help out on that side. We have a community library. We have a community museum, snow removal on the side streets during the winter months. Snow in Hyder is on the average about 27 feet. Operation of a summer visitor center. We also oversee the solid waste, even though it's non-compliant. The community association has taken a very active role to do what we can to make sure that that solid waste is not out there for the bears and to provide dangers to the children in the community. We operate the TV station. We oversee the State of Alaska Small Boat Harbor. We also administer grant opportunities that may come to the community as a nonprofit. We also maintain a very active economic development program. In addition, the HCA has a contract with the Department of Transportation to maintain the 14 miles of state roads that are in the area. Position of the Hyder Community Association on HB 255 is very reflective of the sponsor statement. We fully support the bill and recognize it as an opportunity for the community of Hyder and other rural communities in our state to move forward in a responsible manner to meet local needs and concerns while avoiding what has been rightly described as the thickest of bureaucratic red tape. While today we are looking at a conceptual process, we feel this bill could provide rural communities throughout the state the ability to go the extra mile in meeting critical local needs with local talents and local capability. I co-chair the position as in the Southeast Conference as a regional economic development committee chair. I think there are a number of our small communities in Southeast in the rest of the state that could benefit from this bill. Particularly, I know on Prince of Wales Island, in Representative Kukash's area, there are a number of small communities that operate under the community association form of keeping things under control. Unfortunately, for those communities, not just in Southeast, but throughout the state, it is very difficult for them to participate in this forum. So I'd hope that what the position that Hyder's taking is one that the others would take too. I would like to point out that often has been the case for the community of Hyder that we've identified what may be a potential funding source for us or service that we would like to participate in, but we have been unable to because of the lack of government status or organization or provisions that are being offered here in this bill. On the other hand, we've been quite successful in accomplishing an awful lot with our community association. In closing our statement of HB support for HB 255, I'd like to share with you in a very exciting economic development efforts we're making in Hyder. As I previously mentioned, historically, we've had 5 or 6 jobs in the community. A little over 18 months ago, we got actively involved in a project, which is the construction of a bottled water project program. Today, as a result of the planning process and the good graces of support from the U.S. Department of Commerce, Economic Development Administration, we will be completing our bottled water plant in about 4 months. We'll hire the first of 41 employees that will go to work in the plant, all local jobs. Unfortunately, we've had zero support from the state of Alaska. However, we do hope that as the next couple of years go by, we do get some help on the transportation issue. The plant, which is pretty unique, has some features that are worth mentioning. We'll be manufacturing plastic bottles, which is a new first in the state. Manufacturing over 100,000 per day at startup. would be doing the bottle fill, cap, label, and shipping. Again, over 100,000 per day. And we've constructed a major pallet manufacturing facility, which will create one new pallet every 48 seconds. This is remarkable. It's been done through the Hydra Community Association. In closing, I urge your support of House Bill 255, and we see this, like I said, major step forward for the smaller communities that use the community association form of local organization. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Senator Gosky.
Thank you. And thanks for the update on the community. It's always nice to hear the exciting developments in the smaller communities and to hear how you're doing it on your own. If Representative Dyson's bill were to be enacted as it is now, what would it mean specifically to Hyder? I mean, you've got this smorgasbord of options. What would you do differently under this legislation that you're not able to do?
First thing I think that it would do for us is last year and the last 2-3 years, we spent a lot of time in Southeast Alaska in development of the Southeast Transportation Plan. And it was determined that Hyder was off the map as far as being part of that plan. In fact, Senator Torgerson had gave us a hand and had made available some funds that could be available for the development of a marine facility in Hyder. And at that time, the senator had in mind that Hyder would participate with something such as the IFA, the Inter-Island Ferry Authority. Unfortunately, we were not able to participate because of inability to secure the bonding and to go in as a partner with Saxman, Ketchikan, and the folks in Prince of Wales. I think in transportation terms, immediately that would it would be a big help to us. There are some of the programs, the state programs, that I know we would be we would get actively involved in. There are a number of activities that I think we could do a better job in Hyder to help the regional economy. For example, right now, and again, it goes back to bonding and that, we've found that there is at least 65 empty trucks, container trucks, going southbound on the Alaska Highway every day. The positioning of Hyder and Stewart is a natural for developing marine facilities there to take product that would come out of Southeast Alaska that could be directed by barge into Hyder and then take advantage of inexpensive transport of goods to the East Coast. We have, and we've spent a lot of time studying the transportation issue. And I think this would be one area that we would take and definitely find some interest, particularly in the bonding side, the access to funds. But we spent a lot of time on this whole issue of transportation, how it would relate to the output of the Hyder Waterworks. And I know that we sold all the production that will come out of the Hyder plant. It will all be sent to Detroit, then on to the East Coast under the name of Alaska Chill, and it will go into 40,000 everything from boutiques to exercise gyms, gas stations, grocery stores, and the like. If we can do this with water, we can do it with fish. And we're actually rewriting the direction what transportation patterns could be in the region. And I think this particular bill would help us out in trying to establish facilities in Hyder.
interchange between Kaskia and John illustrates the problem. Without recognition under state law, it's very difficult for the state agencies to give these folks a place at the table and to let not only let them participate in the discussion and the planning and so on, but also for them to be a recipient of lots of different kinds of programs that the state has. I think Community and Regional Affairs, or whatever they're now called, in the post-scoring era, have struggled to find an entity there that they can establish a relationship with to do stuff. Appreciate your testimony. It's eloquent. Oh, and does anybody know of a community anywhere in the world that with 5 employees, 4 of them at halftime, is doing so many things with so little? Would you be interested in running for governor?
I tell you, it's been an incredible 2 years putting this project together. And it happened only after a lady called me on the phone, and she was a true New Yorker, and very bang, bang, bang. And she says, "You people in Alaska don't answer your phones. You're all too busy. Your governor doesn't answer his phone. Your Department of Commerce don't answer their phone. They're busy with another client." And I said, "Well, how'd you get my name?" And she told me of a person here in Juneau. They said, "You know a lot of things about a few things, you know." And she said, "I need water. I need Alaska water. And I need a lot of water." And it was about 72 hours later, I went to Ketchikan. And here comes 4 folks from Detroit that were ready to do business. But she told me, she says, "The only reason that Hyder was the one that got this thing was because everybody was too busy. We'll call you back." And she had a 2-week history. She had all the numbers of a lot of our friends, and everybody was too busy to respond. And it's a pretty amazing story.
Representative Kukesh.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to make a comment that, Representative Dyson was putting this together. There was a lot of people who were under the impression that Native communities were interested in participating in this kind of bill, but it's interesting to me that Hyder, which is a non-Native community, I don't think there's a Native there.
We have one Navajo who was going through San Diego and made a long right turn, brought his Mexican girlfriend with him, and they live in Hyder.
There's another community in my in Titus, not in my district, but Gus Davis, similar to that kind of situation. So I just wanted to make, I noticed a newspaper person here writing really furiously, and I just wanted to make sure that we made that comment. Thank you.
Gus Davis, there's a lot of Navajos as well.
Wrong kind of Indian.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Any other questions, Mr. Pearson? Okay, next we have Kevin Ritchie, sitting here patiently ready to testify.
Thank you. Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipal League, and obviously we're real interested in any bills that have to do with municipalities. This bill is new enough that it hasn't gone through our local government committee, but I did want to say a few things about this topic because it's something that we've obviously put a lot of thought into. One clarification between home rule city and second class city is essentially the states of the United States set up by the Constitution are set up as home rule states, meaning that they can do, the states have all powers that have not been reserved by the Constitution. So instead of second class city, the situation is right now is they're allowed to do anything that's allowed them specifically in law, but not things that aren't, whereas a home rule city can essentially do anything that's not prohibited to it or that's not, unless it's mandated by law. So you have a great deal more flexibility in a home rule city, and that's the same concept really across the United States. I mean, there's home rule and other types of cities. So from the standpoint of flexibility on the local level, it's obviously a real advantage. Whereas a community like Quinnahawk sat down and within the bounds of what it was allowed to do did in fact work things out. This would really allow communities kind of flexibility to sit down and make some probably additional structural changes that if you wanted to go through the state statute process to do it, it would obviously take a long time and maybe look different when it came out. This actually allows stronger local home government, which is, I think, a goal of the Constitution, our Constitution. And the concept that Representative Dyson was talking about, the difference between what we now have as home rule cities, is in the unorganized borough, a home rule or first-class city is literally a borough in that it has all the same responsibilities of a borough. It has its own school district. For example, Wrangell is a home rule municipality or first-class or home rule municipality with its own school district. So is Pelican. So is Tanana. But those choices really are difficult for any community to make. And if, in fact, we had another 50 communities that wanted to be home rule municipalities in the state of Alaska, we'd all of a sudden have 50 more school districts, which probably doesn't make sense, you know, in terms of how those might operate. And even now, you have a small municipality that has chosen, which there's not too many that have chosen to become home rule cities. Well, they have a district sort of inside a bigger REAA, so you're actually doing two types of school districts in a relatively small area with small population. The other thing I wanted to mention is that I've done a lot of reading and talking with folks like Vic Fisher, he's actually the chair of the Local Government Committee of the Constitutional Committee, and it's a wealth of information. And the problem that you cannot resolve really constitutionally is the fact that a tribal government obviously is one run by the members of the tribe, and a municipal government has to be anybody within the boundary of a particular area. So that question is, it's not really possible probably to merge in any reasonable way those two concepts, but this would appear to give people in the district the flexibility to sit down and talk about things sort of like Quinnahock has done, but make it more a structural part of their government. And then the last thing I wanted to mention, of course, is that as the Municipal League, we feel, and in fact the Constitution feels as well, the writers of the Constitution, that local government is the best way when you get people in a community to sit down and talk about the problems of the community and then actively apply their efforts to fixing that problem. We feel that that's the most effective way to attack any problem, especially a local problem. The whole structure of local government in Alaska is in question in a lot of rural areas simply because even though problems have to be solved and local problems can be solved, problems can usually be solved best locally, the whole structure of funding and education and taxation really needs to be considered to keep these areas healthy and functioning, or else things either don't get done or they fall eventually to the state to do those things. And so we're obviously advocating for continued funding when necessary for small communities, revenue sharing programs, and so on. Thank you.
Questions for Kevin? When do you think you can consider this in front of your local government board or whatever group?
We have a meeting within 2 weeks, but I also don't see, I can't imagine, since this is an optional power, that there would be opposition to funding. There'd be no opposition to it, and some communities might want to take advantage of it. So I have a hard time imagining we would be against it, even though the committee hasn't seen this bill particularly.
Questions? Thank you, Kevin. Thank you. Anybody else sign? Is there anybody on teleconference? And how about Dan?
Dan Bockhorst is there to answer questions as well, sir.
Okay. Pat Poland, are you on?
Mr. Chairman, I am.
Did you wish to testify or just answer questions or what?
Actually, I had not intended to testify. I would, I guess, based on the testimony I've heard this morning, like to offer some information, some observations, and some comments, if that would be permissible.
Absolutely. Please do.
Okay. For the record, my name is Pat Poland. I'm director of the Municipal Assistance Division within the Department of Community and Economic Development. First of all, I guess I would like to start off saying, like everyone, that we're supportive of the end goal that we hear expressed here, which is providing maximum flexibility and maximum control at the local level. Like Kevin and everyone, we believe that that is where the solutions lie. I'd like to, there's a few technical issues. First of all, there's been reference to issues about school districts, planning and zoning and audits with respect to home rule status if we don't change the name. That is true, generally speaking, in the unorganized borough. It is not true inside of organized boroughs. So if a community within the Northwest Arctic Borough, for example, adopted a home rule charter, it would not be subject to those conditions because the borough constitutes the school district. The borough is the planning and platting authority up there. There is also a provision in state law that requires the commissioner of the Department of Education to approve the formation of any new school district with less than 250 children. That roughly equates to about 1,250 people. And with the exception of perhaps Tok and I don't know if the Copper Center Glen Allen area might fall into this category, that those would probably be the only two areas in the state that would really potentially rise above that level there. Again, those were a couple of I think technical issues. I want to also comment that I've heard there's been several expressions, or at least I believe I've heard several expressions of concern that communities right now are precluded from participating in the state's local government system, and I think that's more an issue of perception than it is of reality. This bill doesn't change the standards for municipal incorporation. You have to have 25 adult resident voter signatures on a petition to get a community incorporated, and that would remain the same regardless of whether this bill was passed or not. There's also been the suggestion that there is a fair amount of red tape and mandatory powers associated with second-class cities. And again, I don't think that that's an accurate representation. There are really no mandatory powers for second-class cities. They do have to conduct elections. They have to hold council meetings. But I would expect that would be functions of any normal local government. They do not have to do anything per se. And in fact, the true test is that there is a demonstrated need for local government. And historically, the Boundary Commission has been very permissive in determining that standard has been met, that basically if a community expresses a desire to participate in the state system, the commission has approved their petition for incorporation. I think one of the positive things that we saw coming out of a potential home rule charter for second-class cities was relating to communities like Quinhock, where they have actually entered into what is presently a contractual relationship between the tribe and the second-class cities to define who provides public services there, the nature of those services, and the responsibilities of each body. Right now, as I said, that's done on a contractual basis. It's kind of subject to renegotiation each year, and it's approved by the respective councils. Going to a home rule type of system would allow them to basically embody the substance of that agreement in a charter agreement that would be approved by the community at large, could be ongoing, and could be subject to change by the local voters as well. So I think it just enhances the credibility of that kind of approach. Those were just some comments and observations I wanted to make. I'd be glad to answer questions. And also Dan Bockhorst, who is probably one of the most technically proficient people on municipal government, is here with me as well.
Okay, thank you very much, Pat. Are there questions for Mr. Poland? Mr. Bockhorst, did you wish to testify? Are there any issues that have been brought up that you're that are of concern or you'd like to give your 2 cents worth?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, this is Dan Bockhorst. I don't have any specific comments to offer in addition to those that were expressed by Mr. Poland and also Marjorie Vandoor. I think that between the two of them that they hit on any issues and points that I would care to offer at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Jewell first.
Mr. Bockhorst, I believe. I'm not sure who really should answer this, yourself or the bill sponsor. And he did in part, and that is, maybe you listened to some of the earlier testimony about what we're going to call this entity. Do you have any suggestions?
Through the chairman, I think the suggestion of, again, that Marjorie Vandoor raised of the concerns about calling something other than a city government, I think that's a legitimate issue. Certainly the suggestion that I believe it was Representative Halcrow offered about putting a modifier in front of the word home rule city, calling it limited home rule city, I think those are certainly options, either of those two options. I think as Marjorie Vandoor indicated, I think it's clear what the intention is here, and I think that these technical aspects of this issue can be addressed through, in a fairly easy manner through some consideration between now and the next time that the committee considers this bill.
Representative Dyson.
I just wanted to say thank you to Pat and Dan and their really cooperative attitude. And actually what we have here in the committee substitute is largely their work. And the administration and these people have been very helpful in trying to get something they've taken our good intentions and put it into something I think is really practical and comes out of their experience and their professionalism and a really helpful attitude that I, for one, really appreciate. Thank you.
Are there any other, St. Jules, do you have a follow-up? I cut you off there. Any other questions from committee members? I know Representative Dyson, this is a bill you want to move quickly, but with the one question about I'd like to hold this until Tuesday and move it out on Tuesday, but I'd like to make sure that Department of Law or whatever, we get this name whatever settled so that it doesn't become an issue that festers itself as we move along. And the other thing is we have not received a fiscal note on this, and so we need to get a fiscal note on it before we move it out. But, Representative Dyson.
And I appreciate the committee hearing it. It's glad to get to this point here, 5 or 6 weeks into the session. I would encourage all of us, and particularly those of you who have either live or have more contacts in the rural areas, to brainstorm about a name. Sounds like we have to get the word city into it to avoid the potential constitutional problem. Yeah, but I would, and I appreciate Representative Halcrow's suggestion of the word limited as opposed to second class. I just would encourage you to brainstorm and communicate with me or Peter between now and next Tuesday on what is the best name that accurately communicates what the community is, how it's organizing, and would be acceptable or the least pejorative. Some or the other. I don't like second class. Limited might be better, but anyways, I would just encourage some thoughtful and imaginative brainstorming about that in the next 4 days.
Representative Murkowski.
Yep. I would request, since this bill is not going to judiciary, and I appreciate your comments on it, Representative Dyson, but that when this brainstorming is complete and you have arrived at the solution, we could have for the committee an opinion from Tam Cook stating that this is going to pass muster according to at least one attorney, so that this attorney has a little more assurance that we're okay, if you wouldn't mind.
One of the ways that we could do something like that is I could appoint a subcommittee here to address this issue between now and Tuesday and I think that might be appropriate. And since Representative McCaskey, you're an attorney.
I'm not writing the legal opinion.
But you can certainly get in consultation. I appoint Representative Dyson, Representative Murkowski, and Representative Kukesh to be a subcommittee. You're an attorney also, Representative Kukesh.
Wrong place, the wrong time.
Could read, Mr. Chairman, he was looking the other way.
Shake your head. You're a great subcommittee member. Okay, with that, are there any other questions or comments about this bill?
I think we learned a very valuable lesson today from the gentleman from Hyder, and that is when opportunity knocks, or in this case calls, you better answer the phone.
Very good point. Seeing no other input from the committee, we are adjourned. Our next scheduled meeting will be Tuesday.